The following special edition is brought to you by Miles Finch Innovation, passionate about ideas, imagination, and facilitating a culture of innovation. Now, let's get on with the show. You are listening to Business in the Morning, conversations around sales, marketing, innovation, and transformative leadership. And welcome to the special edition broadcast series, The 7 C's of Creative Leadership, How to Build, Foster, and Facilitate a Culture of Innovation. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Tony Vengrove.
All right, welcome back to this final segment of this special edition series, The 7 C's of Creative Leadership. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my friend and colleague, Tony Vengrove. Good morning, Tony. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Todd. I'm real excited for today's conversation.
Well, you know, we have a very special guest today, Tony. For this final piece of the series, we're joined by Ivy Ross. She's the fearless leader of Google Glass. I can't wait to dive into this one. I bet you are looking forward to it as well.
I am. I really put Ivy up on a pedestal. I think she represents everything there is about creative leadership. She's held really great roles around design, innovation, marketing at big brands like The Gap, Disney, Old Navy, and now Google, of course. And I think everybody is in for a treat. She really exemplifies all of the 7 C's.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So let's get right into our conversation with Ivy. But a quick note before we do that, in our final segment following our conversation with Ivy, not only will Tony and I reflect on what he and I learned from her, he and I will also share our final thoughts on this entire series, including the great little nuggets of information that we learned from all these conversations with some of these fascinating leaders. And then finally, what comes next from Tony and Todd. So Ivy Ross up next after this quick break. We'll be right back.
This program is brought to you by Miles Finch Innovation, LLC, a creative consultancy that is passionate about ideas, imagination, and facilitating a culture of innovation. Miles Finch Innovation helps companies navigate the messy territory of corporate innovation. They're strategic thinking partners who can help you get unstuck and identify creative solutions to your toughest challenges. They also love to train and speak on the subject of creative leadership. Learn more about how they can help you at milesfinchinnovation.com. Miles Finch Innovation, idea-centric, strategically driven, humanly conscious.
All right, Todd Schnick and Tony Vengrove back with you in our special edition series, The 7 C's of Creative Leadership. As promised, we're now joined by Ivy Ross, the fearless leader of Google Glass. Ivy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So good to have you. Appreciate you taking some time to join us. Before we get into our conversation, Ivy, take a quick minute and inform the audience about you, your background, and the work you're doing with Google Glass.
Sure. I grew up in a household with a dad who was a well-known industrial designer, worked for Raymond Loewy, designed cars, just product designer, and taught me how to see things beyond what they appear to be, which, you know, is an incredible gift, I now realize, and really, you know, is a big piece of my DNA. I started as a metalsmith. My work is in 10 museums, really asking the question, why and why not, and working in the studio and developing metal techniques. But realized I had more ideas than I had fingers. So wanted to learn how to take my ideas, put them on paper, and get them out in the world. From there, went to designing for the fashion world, everything from Swatch Watch to Coach handbags, Mattel toys. I went from product design to marketing because I don't think that, you know, the old days you could make a product, hand it off, and someone would make up a story about it. Now it happens at the moment of inception of the story is clear when the product is being created. And now I'm at head of Google Glass, or fearless leader, as I named myself, which really is almost like a retrospect job. It is really touching on everything I've done from, you know, product to marketing to innovation to psychology. So I've been here a few months and having a great time.
Well, thank you for being on the show and welcome once again. I think you have such a really interesting background and really exemplify what creative leadership is all about. You know, your career has spanned from artist to corporate executive. And can you tell us a little bit about your creative leadership journey and how did you ultimately figure out how to lead others in a corporate environment in order to maximize their creative thinking?
Yeah, I think probably in school, I was an art major and a psychology minor. And when I first got into the corporate world, I was a little bit amazed at how they created or did not create the conditions under which creativity could grow. And so I just observed for a while and then was fearless because I was ignorant about rethinking how this should happen. Because I don't think, having been an artist, I understood, and creator, I understood what is my own process that I do for myself when I am my most creative, and how do I give that gift to others? Like, what does that look like if you were to amplify that up from the one to the many? And so I started really asking myself those questions, and little by little through my career, one step at a time, started to play with different possibilities of how we work together to give people that same insight and gift that one does with themselves when they're being an artist. But how do you do that in a corporate environment with many people in delivering the results that you need to deliver?
So why don't we talk a little bit about Project Platypus during your Mattel years? Because I imagine from what I've heard you talk about Project Platypus, it was like the perfect laboratory to really hone creative leadership principles and beliefs and really understand what it takes to create the conditions for others to be creative.
Yeah, sure. You know, in developing ideas and product, there was always this time cycle. You know, you have a 12-week product development cycle, and every week we were just pounding away at developing that product. And I thought, wait a minute, you know, we don't ask a computer for output till we give it input. And I know when I was my most creative, I would have a thought or a kind of what if question in my mind, and I would take in all the information and stimulus that I needed to then give myself the ability to make new connections between this new stimulus to come out with some new ideas. And so I started saying, what if we were to reverse this 12-week product development creation cycle, so to speak? And what if the first 2 weeks I just gave the team the gift of input or stimulus that would trigger new thinking that would be the output for the other 10 weeks. So instead of this steady drumbeat of, you know, output, output, work, 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 you know, my hypothesis was that if we stop and take 2 weeks to bring in new influences, new information, and sit back and receive it, and then be very spontaneous with what we learn, which I could talk about in a minute, from those new stimulus, then those 10 weeks, we would not only be more productive, but the ideas would be more creative and it would be more enjoyable. And sure enough, I was correct. And that's just one example of what the program did. But of the 2 weeks, the first week, I actually spent connecting people, creating the conditions of trust. Because I think it is when you're going to create together, you have to create an environment where there is no judgment so that people feel free to say crazy, silly, wacky things that as they get iterated may turn into be very practical, successful ideas. But if you don't have that environment where people feel like they can throw those things on the wall, it never gets to that place. So I'm simplifying things in the time we have. But in that first week, it was really about bringing in a bunch of outside speakers to also talk about how you connect patterns of seeing together. So I created what I call the desk of 12 brains because we had 12 people in the program. And instead of, you know, people very much have ideas, they draw them out, they put them in the closet, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I created an environment where as people were stimulated by the things I was bringing in, we would throw up on the desk of 12 brains thoughts, words. And again, to be able to do that without judgment, you have to have a lot of connection and trust between people. And then the second week of the program, it was almost like a mini TED. If we were taking on a subject, for example, we did once on what if Mattel had a brand that was funny, I thought, well, if I was going to ponder that and want to come up with creative solutions, what would I do? And so I thought I'd want to understand what is laughter anyway, and where did it come from? So I found a professor of laughter at UCLA that came in and talked to us about its, you know, where it started. And I found Moshe the Clown, who went to third world countries and taught people how to laugh after war. And then we went and we watched kids play at a playground. You know, when were they laughing? So really kind of started at ground zero, because I think sometimes when we attack a problem creatively, you know, we are so jaded with what we know today, and we don't go back to really understand its roots in order to recreate things. So this two-week hiatus, so to speak. And I remember some of the designers go, what do you mean we don't have to produce anything? I said, oh, you definitely have to produce in the last 10 weeks, but I think that you will be, you know, more productive if I give you this time to absorb things. And that was certainly the key ingredients to making Project Platypus a success.
That's really interesting. There's so much to follow up with you, Ivy. But you talked about time and really kind of that the curiosity you had about laughter to me is really interesting because, you know, curiosity is one of the seven C's of creative leadership. And it seems to me that many organizations just don't carve out enough time to be curious and really to kind of dig deep for the truth and these insights that can really make a big difference to either spurning new ideas or helping designers kind of take something from good to great. Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally. The time, you know, to find that one little nugget or insight that sparks, you know, a whole new way of thinking is huge. And I think it was Gordon McKenzie that had this great quote. You know, we look at cows and we see them as, oh, they produce milk. But if we didn't give them the time to graze, they would never produce the milk. And I feel like it's the same thing almost with people. We forget that you need that grazing time. And so this is something that, again, in the corporate world, in not understanding what creativity is, it's a different way of taking things in and putting them through your filter. And you can't be at your desk all the time. You need to be out in the world. You need to be going on safari digging for those nuggets. And that's just a practice that is a little counter to corporate culture.
There's so much being discussed and written about and spoken about creativity. And it almost feels like the conversation is, you know, you have to be creative. Here's how you be creative, be creative, be creative. But in the corporate world, I'm starting to wonder if the conversation should be really more about, you know, here's some bad behaviors that are interfering with creativity. Because at the end of the day, creativity is really our default state. It's what makes human beings so unique. It's in our DNA. And quite often, it's behaviors that are putting fear into people. And as you said earlier, that when you don't have that trust there, you know, creativity is going to run for cover.
Yep. I think, you know, we've gone as kids. I mean, this is why I believe in play, and we need to be playing in corporations more, because playing is about seeing possibilities. When you let kids do free play as opposed to constructed play, which I would liken to right now in corporations, we have very structured play. It was structure, so to speak, not even structured play. It's, and we're wired as kids to do this in that free play, being able to stare at a cardboard box for 45 minutes and in your mind's eye go, wow, it could be a TV set if I did this. It could be a tent if I put it over my head. Opens, really literally carves these neural pathways of possibility so that you, even as you become an adult, you start to not look at things in one way, but see all the possibilities, which is what creativity is. And so by not creating an environment in corporations that allows people to play more, and I mean playing with ideas without an outcome. I think play is really, you know, there's many definitions of it, but it's like doing things without an outcome is one of them. And in companies, we've gotten very outcome driven. And I maintain that in order to get to a successful outcome, you need to be able to play with all the possibilities. And that means the freedom to think without boundaries. And that's, you know, what isn't happening enough. And that, quite frankly, is what won me the chairman's award for sustainability of the company at Mattel, is to just be brave enough to kind of rethink how we allow creative people to think.
Ivy, we've talked an awful lot on this series about the importance of playtime in an office environment. And I love how you refer to it as grazing time. The cow metaphor speaks to me in a way that really helps me understand it. There are a lot of hardcore driven corporate leaders who have been doing it the same way for so long, this command and control process, that it's hard for them to change. They may understand conceptually the importance of this, because if you tell them, you know, well, look how creative kids are when we just let them have playtime, and we need to do the same for our creative people, they understand it conceptually, but they really struggle in the actual change and how to lead that way. Do you have any advice on some guy who's been doing it the same way for so long, how he begins to make that mindset shift?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really hard. Who feels it knows it. And I think that leader should bring in a leader under them that really can create the environment for that to happen. Because I understand, you know, you can tell people this all day long, but unless you, you know, have felt it or seen its results, you know, it's one thing to understand it. It's another thing to be able to lead this way. So I would like to say that there's a book that you could read, but I don't think it's that simple. I think there's books and information such as the program you're doing that helps to validate these elements. And certainly I think the C's that you have are absolutely the ingredients. But it is, I would say for people like that, it's more like they have to accept and understand, you know, at a very high conceptual level that this is the way they have to create environments for creativity. And I, you know, there are leaders who know how to hold the space for this. I think the best thing for those executives is to acknowledge that they probably need to bring someone in that does know how to do this. It would be very hard for someone that doesn't understand it viscerally to teach them how to do it.
You know, as we've said before, Ivy, the primary role of a creative leader is to create the conditions for others to be creative. So really with kind of that analytical leader that believes and wants to be better at leading innovation, can you share some of your advice of what they can start doing immediately to foster more creative culture?
Yeah, you know what's interesting? I have both sides of my brain, the kind of creative and analytical, and I find that one feeds the other. So I think probably a leader like that should, I mean, and I think the beauty is exercising both muscles, you know, both sides of the brain. So this idea that maybe they could start by giving their teams a little more freedom to see what comes up when they take some of the boundaries away and then go into the analytical mode of, wow, let me analyze what those possibilities are that the team has thrown out. I mean, it's almost like they need to start, yeah, exercising that muscle that maybe they haven't used. Because I think everyone is creative to varying degrees. You know, creativity is in part making new connections, neural connections between things. Between things that you've taken in. So I would advise that they try, you know, look at where they're holding the reins really tight, maybe get their most creative people together. I think part of it is I've often done things, come into a company and it didn't matter what your title was. And again, I'm a creative, so I could see this in people, but, you know, we'd be talking about a project or a task and I would see the fire in someone's eyes or the spark. And it wasn't necessarily their job. It's like someone who came from strategy had this really great idea about a video we should make, let's say. And I would say to the person, why don't you make it? And they looked at me and said, me? I said, yeah, you. I said, you know, I could see, you know, you really understand it. And so I think things like beginner's mind, you know, every 7 years they say we have new cells in our body. So we're actually new people. And I believe that we are a product of our experience base and we're all having different experiences all the time. But I think in companies, we get so fixated on keeping you in the same silo. You know, if you're, you know, you're a manager of marketing, a director of marketing, a VP of marketing, when really what I've seen at Project Platypus, I kind of stripped people of their titles and gave them this shared experience and then looked for where the passion and fire was. And, you know, there are probably not all of them, but 50% of the people I would have given different business cards to when they left Project Platypus. And so I think one small thing to just spark people and start some creativity may be to, for an analytical leader to look at their team and either ask them or be bold and start to say, you know what if, you know, you and you worked on this project and kind of a little bit role reversals. Because I think beginner's mind really helps with creativity. It's putting people's minds to something else. You know, and that's why people have said to me, I don't understand. You started in product design and now, you know, the last 7 years I've been in marketing. And to me, I totally understand. It's like you take your skill with you. And I think it's inspiring in a very creative process to apply your mind to something new. So that's one thing to just start with is to consider or taking a project and pulling different people on it that you maybe wouldn't have put on a project and being willing to experiment. I mean, really being willing to experiment without knowing the outcome or without trying to control the outcome and just start to observe and see what you have.
Yeah, those are two big ones. I think what's fascinating about you that you're definitely a very deep and creative thinker. Any advice thinking back perhaps to your, you know, when you were leading innovation or Gap or another company in the corporate environment, so much process can start creeping in. And before you know it, you're just following process, hitting milestones and you're chasing deliverables such as, you know, if I'm the director of innovation, I have to develop 20 new concepts, bring 2 to market and test X amount, so forth. And the whole thing gets distilled down into these KPIs. And I think you've tapped into this kind of experimentation without any outcome. But how did you navigate or manage up when bosses were starting to kind of really drill in and start hitting these kind of tangible milestone dates when you might say, you know what, that date was kind of arbitrary. And if we want to do this right, we need more time. Any advice on how folks can get a little bit more courageous and really defend their ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I'm someone that, because that is an issue. And I, for example, Project Platypus, I did it secretly. I knew enough to know if I went to my boss at the time and said, this is how I want to operate, they would have said, huh? And so what I did, and again, this is, you have to be, you know, a little bit of a rebel and have courage. But I went to my team and I said, I have a different way of working and I'd like 12 volunteers. And I had about 200 people at the time. And we're going to work offline at night and on the weekends to prove, you know, if we have to prove this methodology. And then once I had a success story, I kind of went back to my boss and said, showed him the results. And he was like, oh my God, how do we do more of this? And I said, well, I think I'm not going to do this in the closet anymore. So part of it is, unfortunately, sometimes I think you have to model some of these things offline and then bring it back online. But in the example of the 12 weeks, I didn't ask for any more time. I just did it differently. You know, within that time frame, said, I'm going to re-engineer the process. That's one way. Another way, at Gap, I went to the CEO and I created something, you know, called MindSpark, which was just a 3-day taking people for all the reasons you just mentioned, because we're very set in the way the machine works. So I said, let's take a problem and give me 3 days with a cross-section of people from a brand where we just exercise a different way of looking at the problem and then let them take it back into the business and execute it. You just have to be creative in how you get at this a number of different ways. I think any CEO, I would like to believe, if they're stuck, you know, to give 3 days of time to maybe have the team work together in a different way and then come back and still, you know, absolutely, this is all about producing results. It's just, how do you get to better results? So there's this misnomer that, you know, being creative is not getting anything done or it's playing. But like I said earlier, it's playing to create the possibilities, not just anniversarying the realities, which is how you get to innovation. So, for me, it's every company, there might be a different method. I did it one way at Platypus by creating a whole separate think tank that ran parallel to the existing business. At Gap, it was sessions where, you know, we take people out of their jobs for 3 days at all levels, cross-section. Diversity is really important, and just give them permission to think differently. And then they went back into the system. So there's no one easy answer. Again, it goes back to playing with different methodologies that might work for your culture.
Yeah, Ivy, I think it's important to reiterate a point you made, that this edict doesn't have to come down from the high command. You could be a leader of a creative team, right? And still can instill in yourself this mindset of a little rebelliousness. You know, I mean, right? This doesn't have to, you don't have to wait for permission. I mean, you can do this within the confines of your small creative team, yes?
Yeah, no, that's what I did at Mattel. I said, wait a minute, I could do this. I could do this on my own. I don't need anyone's permission. I mean, as long as we deliver, you know, the department has to deliver, but how I deliver is up to me. And then it was so successful that I started pulling in people from finance and marketing. And in the next session, they became part of it. But I modeled it first, like I said, even under the radar. You know, sometimes we think we need permission, but I don't think you do. I mean, especially, again, providing at the end of the day you're delivering, how you deliver, you know, you should try different methods among your team.
Yeah, that's great. You know, you're kind of tapping into something that's been in my head for a while, and I was going to write a blog post about it. But, you know, almost with all the writing about innovation and how to do it, there's really only one answer. And the answer is any way you can. And as you said, culture to culture, there's going to be differences there. Idea to idea, there's so many different variables that a leader just has to assess the culture, the people involved, the opportunity, and figure out the best method to get some learning and get some traction and get that idea rolling forward.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing is to, what I have found works is to model, you know, one small step at a time and then have a little success. And then I've done this even in my own creative department and other departments said, wow, your people seem to be operating differently. You know, what's up? And so then you start to kind of spread the information. But, you know, sometimes people, I think they don't try anything because they are overwhelmed with how could I change the way we work? Our culture is so embedded. You know, those are all excuses in my mind. Start small. And it's amazing. It's like an energetic thing. If you can get the right energy going, even among, you know, six people, it will just start to spread, like model some new successes. But it is true that I often see people just stuck because they feel it's too overwhelming of a task. And it might be at one time, but start small.
So Ivy, we're at the tail end of our series here. We received a lot of great feedback along the way, including a suggestion from one person about adding an eighth C. And that suggestion was this compassion. And I just thought that was a brilliant addition. Can you share with the audience, you know, why is love, why is trust and respect so critical for a creative leader and the creative process?
Yeah, I think that is actually quite brilliant to add compassion. I think some of the best things get created when you see through other people's eyes or perspective. And I think we need to do that. I think the best businesses that have been created today have been truly created out of someone's own need or seeing a need, being compassionate and seeing a need for someone else or another culture or society. So I think it's really important to almost, what I think compassion does, and empathy as well, is gets yourself out of the way in some ways, your conscious mind that judges, and gets really taps into your unconscious. And that's where I think a lot of creativity happens. So I think the more as a society we can be in that state, which is, as we talk about, deep inherent states, I think that's what, you know, we all are. And so the tap back into that is really tapping into a wealth of information. I also think with that comes, you know, and I think Brené Brown has said this well about vulnerability, that, you know, you can't be creative until you're vulnerable. And I think she's right that we have created a society that is afraid to be vulnerable. And if we can go to that space of compassion and love and connection for both each other and ourselves, I think we tap more into our unconscious, where there's a lot of great information sitting.
Ivy, thanks so much for being on the show. It was a really great conversation. As you know, this episode wraps up our initial 9-part series on the 7 C's of creative leadership. And in the spirit of bringing it all together, I'd love to throw each of the 7 C's at you for a quick soundbite about why each one is so critical. So here we go. Here's the lightning round of the 7 C's of creative leadership with Ivy. So let's start from the top. Communication.
The glue that holds ideas together.
Curiosity.
Asking the what if question, or but why, how do things work?
Creativity.
Seeing things beyond what they appear to be and being free to make new connections.
I love that. Connecting.
Speaking of connections, I think that's how the brain makes new ideas. So it is imperative.
Culture.
Be immersed in it and be the observer of it at the same time.
Change.
Or die. I think the only thing guaranteed is that things will never stay the same. I mean, there used to be an invention every 10 years. Now it's every 10 seconds.
And lastly, courage.
Nothing new will ever come about if you don't have it.
Oh, my.
Excellent.
Tony, you know, we've done hours and hours of this series, and we could have summed it up in that one bit that we just did with Ivy. That was outstanding. Ivy, I hate to say it, but we are about out of time. Before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you and learn about the great work you're doing with Google Glass?
The best thing would be to email me at iross@google.com.
All right. Ivy Ross, the fearless leader of Google Glass. Ivy, it was great to have you. Thanks for stopping by and joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. We have to go to break, but Tony and I will return shortly. And when we do, we'll reflect on our conversation with Ivy Ross and share some final thoughts on the 7 C's of creative leadership as the first phase of this exciting project is coming to an end. We'll be right back.
This program is brought to you by Miles Finch Innovation, LLC, a creative consultancy that cares about training teams and coaching individuals on creative leadership.
They've worked on the front lines of corporate innovation and know firsthand the struggles you face day in and day out. They've walked in your shoes and they can help. Miles Finch Innovation has an engaging training program designed to teach the principles of the 7 C's of creative leadership. If you're interested in building these competencies at your company, be sure to contact them at info@milesfinchinnovation.com. Miles Finch Innovation, idea-centric, strategically driven, humanly conscious.
All right, Todd and Tony back with you. Wow, Tony, what a scintillating conversation with Ivy Ross. We could talk for hours about what we learned there.
Yeah, I agreed. Wasn't I right? I mean, I think
yeah, you were.
She really covers so much of the 7 C's. I love what she said, how each of the 7 C's, from her perspective, seems spot on for creative leadership.
Yeah, she said they are the key ingredients for business creativity. So that was really cool to hear. But what struck you about her conversation with Ivy?
You know, right off the bat, she was talking about her father and how her father taught her to see things beyond what they are today. And I think that goes back to what we've talked about in the second C with Steve Kazanjian around curiosity and how important that is. And for some people, it's more embedded in their DNA, but certainly everybody has the ability to carve out some time and get curious about something, whether it's seeing something cool outside of the office or simply reading a book.
Yeah, I liked how she talked about that in the concept of that you need grazing time. She says, you know, we all expect cows to produce milk, but yet for them to do that, they have to eat a lot of grass. they have to graze. And the metaphor there is that as a creative, you need that time to do your own, quote, grazing. I thought that was a really good way to look at it.
Yeah, and that quote or that metaphor comes from Gordon McKenzie and a great book that he wrote called Orbiting the Giant Hairball, which we'll link to on this episode. But boy, that is something that everybody takes for granted, that creative types just can be creative on the spot. And quite often it takes not just good leadership and planning to give people the right time, but as we talked with Dennis last week, it takes courage sometimes, because sometimes you have to fight for your team and fight for the time they need to do it right.
Yeah. She also talked about the need to exercise both sides of the brain. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, as you know, with me, I have a tool called the idea climate equation, and that is all about the juxtaposition of logical thinking and creative thinking. And so, you know, I totally was nodding my head when she said that. I mean, I think most corporations are a little bit addicted to analytical and logical thinking. It's their comfort zone. It's why people got to where they are for the most part. And that there's such a drive for efficiency, cost reduction, hitting numbers, so forth. So it's really easy to kind of hold the reins of that of analytical thinking too tight sometimes. And as she said, you know, when you hold those reins too tight, your mind's too closed for really good creative thinking.
Yeah. What else struck you?
Well, you know, I thought it was a really good, interesting perspective how she said, you know, we're a product of our experiences. And then she explained how our body actually goes through this 7-year cycle of replacing all of its cells. So we're in this constant rebirthing, so to speak. But as we've said in other episodes on the show, Todd, you know, we've talked again and again about creating experiences individually and for our teams, getting out of the office, seeing stuff that sparks curiosity and imagination and just fuels your brain with interesting things that can create connections and new ideas when you get back to the office.
The note that I took on that, Tony, was along the lines of creativity is making new neural connections when you just are out there observing the world and you take new ideas in. It all processes, and that's where the boom happens. That's when magic starts to happen.
Yeah, especially if you ask yourself great questions when you're observing that. Like, you know, why is this company doing this? Why is this business doing that? What is the insight that they saw that they're activating against? What's the implication for us? Can we do anything with that? I mean, when you walk out and you see that cool stuff, it's not just observing, but again, it gets back to a little bit of curiosity and questioning. You know, why are they doing that? What could we do? And when your brain starts doing that, it's, you know, invariably, it's going to create those novel ideas.
We also talked about a shadow sea, if you will, compassion. Talk about why that's so important.
Well, I think for a lot of reasons. I recall my father, when I got into the ad business for the first time, I went in as an account management guy, much to the disdain of my father, who was a creative director. He was a great mentor, and he reminded me to have compassion for the creative team. In many instances, they would be staying up into the wee hours of the morning working on campaigns and so forth. And so when they came to present, that to have compassion for all the work and that they put into it and the fact that it's their baby. So I think one angle of compassion is to respect the birthing process and the creation process of other individuals, because people really, they love them, right? So it's hard to kind of put all that work into it and just have somebody criticize it right off the bat without acknowledging all the effort. But I think the bigger notion of it, Todd, is that, you know, I just believe fear, and we talked about this with Ivy, you know, fear has the tendency to send creativity running for cover. So without compassion, love, and trust, some of the things that she was talking about, you're going to basically keep creativity kind of squashed because people won't feel comfortable sticking their neck out. So really, at the end of the day, if you're a creative leader, if you're really trying to foster a creative culture, you're trying to drive innovation in your organization, you really can't do it from the old school command and control perspective. Because if you do that, generally, you're going to disengage your team.
Yeah, Tony, boy, I couldn't agree more on that. You know, as we've gone through this series, and I have been learning from you and from our fine guests, I'm beginning to understand that the organizations that thrive and those that are struggling, is the ones that are struggling, frankly, are operating from that command and control structure. And I really understand that a lot better now. But I'm going to be honest with you, Tony. My favorite part of our conversation with Ivy was that Seven Seas lightning round. I thought that was particularly interesting. I really liked how she attacked that. You and I discussed the fact that you and I were going to do a little recap as we wrap this series. I think going through, if you will, sort of our own Seven Seas lightning round might be an interesting way. So what I think we can do here is just rattle off one of the Cs, and then each of us share what we thought was our key, a key insight and a key learning from our conversations. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love it. Let's do it.
All right. So let's start with communication.
Yeah, well, we start off with Perry Baldwin, and Perry had a bunch of great insights. But for me, the one is, won't come as a surprise to you, is, you know, he talked a lot about the power of communicating through objectives. So, you know, the more you can set up objectives that inspire your team to come up with great solutions, the better you are, because generally those solutions are going to be better than anything you come up by yourself.
I agree. What I recall fondly from our conversation with Perry was the idea that, quote, listening is the most important communication tool, which I, you know what, when you think on it, it's obvious, but most of us aren't good at that. And that's so critical to effective communication.
I totally agree.
All right. So the next up is curiosity. In our conversation with Steve Kazanjian, I thought what was really interesting there was the idea that curiosity is the pre-work to creativity.
Yeah. And just to build on that, I think, because I think my takeaway was dovetails nicely with that, is, you know, that curiosity is essentially a search for the truth. You know, those two things combined suggest that if you really want to come up with a creative idea, you really have to understand what your consumer, your customer, what's really happening in their world. How are they using your product? What are they missing? What do they desire? When you really understand and can walk in their shoes and really understand from a real honest perspective what the truth is of their experience, the more your ideas are going to really be on target and resonate.
Yep, I hear that. All right, the next C, creativity. In our conversation with David Bonner, what was your key takeaway?
Well, you know, it's such a big, broad topic, obviously, but I really loved how he had that phrase, you know, at Mariner Marketing, they try to invite everybody into the quote-unquote creative kitchen. And I just think that's a real great visual for everybody to keep in mind, especially in so many corporations where corporations are used to outsourcing creativity, right? So the more, you know, kind of use that analogy of a creative kitchen where everybody has a voice, everybody can participate, everybody can join the conversation, just invites a friendly, collaborative environment. And when you can get there, boy, you never know when somebody's kind of have a big aha moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And upon reflecting on our conversation with David, I recalled his line, like fine wine, sometimes creativity just takes time. You know what I mean? And that was a common theme throughout the whole series. We talked about that a lot. And I worry that in today's modern analytical world, that time isn't always provided. So that was a critical takeaway for me. Next up was connecting with bestselling author Max McKeown. What was your key takeaway there?
I loved which was a theme in his book, the innovation book, which we talked about, the concept of building a bigger brain.
Yeah.
So again, that's a visual, and how connecting people internally with different perspectives, different skill sets, and externally, whether it's through an open innovation program or just creating relationships with university professors and other technologists and experts, it's so important, because when you have that bigger collective brain, so to speak, again, the chances of coming up with some really compelling ideas is greater. And more importantly, as we all know, sometimes coming up with the idea is the easy part. Having that bigger brain is critical when you're trying to solve for the problems that come up that are preventing you from actually getting to commercializing whatever the idea is.
Yeah. My thoughts on Max was the notion of that to really foster innovation, you just need a playful side. You need to let that inner child out. And I'm hearing that more and more as I observe the world, and certainly in the context of creativity and innovation, that the idea of reverting back to how your mind worked as a child is actually how your mind should work now when you're trying to be innovative and creative. And so I thought that was pretty compelling.
Yeah, and you know, that came up in Tim Murphy's conversation, and of course with Ivy as well.
Yeah, it came up quite frequently. Speaking of Tim Murphy, our next C, culture, you know, it's similar to what I was talking about with David Bonner, but you have to create space for creativity to happen.
I love what Tim said when he said, you know, what they do is they try to find passionate people and let them at it, I think was his quote. And boy, that's probably easier said than done, because most cultures kind of try to squash all that kind of rookie enthusiasm out of people. But I thought the way Tim talked about embracing that was really, really refreshing. And I think a lot of companies and cultures would benefit from really giving new people and their enthusiasm a chance to really kind of bring some new thinking and energy into an organization. And leaders can coach that. So rather than just kind of make them feel bad for saying, no, we tried that years ago, or that's not the way we do it around here, is to kind of pull them aside and almost a mentor kind of a framework and say, hey, that's a great idea, but you know, you might want to think about this, this, and that. It's a great idea, but there's some constraints here that we'd have to kind of figure out how to manage it. But you know, kind of work with the people so that they can maintain that enthusiasm and not just kind of squash it.
Yeah, you're here. All right, next up was change management, and our conversation with Jeff Shuck. What was your key takeaway there?
I loved when he said getting new ideas in is not the problem. It's getting old ideas out.
Yeah, that was brilliant. I had never thought of that before, but that's absolutely essentially a problem when you're talking about creativity and innovation, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I think everybody's got their own cognitive map and they have their own perspective on how their organization operates. And quite often, it's getting that old thinking, you know, out of the way to invite, you know, new ways in. I mean, that was brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. I liked the context of him saying change is actually the norm. If you're not changing, if you're not reinventing, if you're not doing things differently or striving to take in those new ideas, as you just said, then you're doing it wrong. We fear change. Most people, most organizations fear change, but that's not the abnormality anymore. In today's business world, in today's world, change is the constant. And if you understand that and embrace that and appreciate that, well, then you're no longer going to fear. It's just part of how you go through the day.
Do you think at the end of the day, though, that organizations really fear change? Or is it just that they have such a tight grip on the status quo that they can't, you know, as Jeff said, they can't let go?
Well, why do they have a tight grip on the status quo? It's because they fear losing control, right? And you could define losing control as saying, all right, well, there's the way to do it. And we know now that there's always new ways to improve and grow.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, cool. Our final C is courage with Dennis Budniewski. What are your key thoughts with that one?
Well, you know, Dennis talked a lot about ambition and how it takes courage on both sides of the table, whether it's the agency side and the client side, to really kind of bring a real big idea to the table. But one thing that I really thought was practical, because courage is a little bit of a softer attribute, you know, he said, you know, keep teams small and manageable and get the right people on board who really believe. And I think that's a real interesting approach that I would recommend creative leaders remember. Because when you have a smaller team that all are rowing the oars in the same direction and believe in what you're doing, you can manage it better, you can get things done faster, but you have a little bit of a coalition as well and strength in numbers, so that when you go forward to present and sell the idea, you have a little bit of kind of that coalition of strength and numbers on your side.
Well, my thinking of our conversation with Dennis was, frankly, it was similar conceptually to the idea that change is the norm, because what Dennis said is, hey, it's okay to be uncomfortable, because if you're uncomfortable, that likely means that you're on the right path. And we're afraid to change. We're afraid of discomfort. And so that gave me a lot of comfort, because that tells me I'm on the right path of my life, because I'm always feeling a little uneasy about a bold decision or a bold move I'm making. And so I thought that that was a profound moment for me.
Yeah. And let's not forget what Ivy said too. You know, Ivy's done a lot of really interesting things. We referenced Project Platypus at Mattel, and the audience can learn more about that. We posted her TED talk that she did on that on our landing page. But when we asked her about how did she do these labs, how did she do Project Platypus, she basically said, you know, she just did it. You know, she got small groups of people together. They did some things on the side, and she created many success stories that left others wanting more. And she said basically that took a little, you know, there was a little bit of a rebel there, and there was a lot of courageousness there. So I think if you're the type of person or leader that's afraid of taking action because you have to get approvals, then that's going to be rough. It's going to be a harder journey. I think taking calculated risks that aren't putting anybody or the organization at risk, but just getting people together and having conversations and putting ideas on paper and being creative and testing things in a small way where you can get to some success stories to share, boy, anybody can really do that. And, you know, in some cultures, I understand why that might feel risky or take some courage. But at the end of the day, isn't that worth risk taking?
You absolutely know it. All right. Well, Tony, I hate to say it, but we're running low on time on this exciting series. I thought that was a really interesting exercise to go through, and it was a nice summation of everything that we've learned and some of the ideas. While I'm saddened that this series is drawing to a close, I do believe we have some exciting things to look forward to. Why don't you walk us through some of those?
Yeah, well, I'm pleased to say, given everybody's fantastic response to these 9 episodes, we are going to keep at it. And Todd and I are going to come back and we're going to do more episodes. We don't have everything fully ironed out, but stay tuned, because we have some exciting news coming about future guests and when you can start listening to more episodes. In addition, we are going to transcribe each of these interviews that we did with all 8 guests, and we're going to put those into a free ebook that will be available for download. So stay tuned and we'll let you know the details once that's complete.
Well, I look forward to that. I got to tell you, Tony, I have so enjoyed this series. I have learned so much. You know, you sit there and think, all right, well, I understand the basics of innovation and creative leadership and what kind of a culture you have to create to facilitate that. But boy, every episode, every conversation, I learned something that was mind-blowing.
Well, I appreciate that, Todd. It was the same for me. And I want to thank you for doing a great job of helping organize this and emceeing the whole thing. I couldn't have done it without you. You know, I think we've just scratched the surface, and I'm excited to keep these things coming. I believe I'm a little bit a pioneer when it comes to some of this creative leadership conversation, because there's a lot of folks out there still chasing innovation as a goal. And I think while that's obviously an important objective is to be an innovative company and have a big pipeline of innovative products, I think the real missing link in all of this is creative leadership. And leaders need to foster creativity in their organization, and they need to foster creative leaders underneath themselves and create these dynamic, exciting, fun to work in organizations where everybody's open to ideas, everybody feels free to share ideas. And boy, wouldn't you like to work in an organization like that?
You know it. You know it. All right. Well, Tony, before we wrap this officially, where can people get in touch with you and learn more about your fine work?
They can go to www.milesfinchinnovation.com, and you can find us on our contact and dialogue page there, or simply type in Tony Vengrove into LinkedIn and you'll find me easily there.
All right. Well, thus endeth the 7 C's of creative leadership. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my friend and colleague, Tony Vengrove. Tony, it was a pleasure to do this with you. I look forward to our future path.
Likewise. Thank you, Todd.
All right. On behalf of today's guest, Ivy Ross, and my co-host, Tony Vengrove, I'm Todd Schnick. Stay tuned. Our conversations around creative leadership will return soon.